Welcome to BrainMachineNetwork.com.
How to produce live comedy with your friend Emily. How to produce live comedy with E-M-I-L-Y Emily.
Hi, I'm Emily Winter. I'm a writer, comedian, and producer in Brooklyn, New York. I run some Time Out Critics Picks comedy shows here that I also take on the road. I also created What a Joke, which was a national anti-Trump comedy festival that raised over $50,000 for the ACLU in 2017. And I do some other stuff. It's fine. I'm very excited to have this podcast. I'm having a great time. I hope you like it. I hope you're learning stuff. Just give it a listen. Okay. Good intro. That's the best one, I think.
Hi, welcome to How to Produce Live Comedy. I'm Emily Winter, and I'm here today with author and storyteller and owner of QED in Astoria, Queens, Cambry Cruz.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hi.
Thank you so much for doing this podcast. I'm so excited to talk to somebody who actually owns a wonderful venue. I've performed here so many times. I've never got to talk to you before, but I love, love, love this venue.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a great little place, and it's strange to me to hear people say that they perform at a place that I own and I haven't actually spoken with them before.
Yeah.
And it's a good reminder that the place exists beyond me. It's got a heartbeat of its own and a community and following and fan base that exists separate and aside from me, which
right.
is wonderful.
Everyone that I talk to about it says the same thing, which is that the audiences are so warm.
Mm-hmm.
And the last time I was here, it was for Mike Drucker's amazing show. I read my own obituary.
Yeah.
So we all read our own obituaries on this show. And it was the first one and it was packed. And it's just like, it's a wild idea for a show. And the audience, like every show here, was 100% on board.
Yeah.
And I mean, at some point in this podcast, I want to talk to you about how you cultivate an audience like that.
Yeah.
But I guess we should probably start with your background and how you got into comedy.
Yeah, well, I've been in New York now. This year, I think, is 18 years, 19 years. And I had been kind of traveling to and from New York prior to that for a few years.
From where?
From Ohio. I was living in Ohio. I'm not from Ohio. I'm from Texas. But I'd always been involved in theater. And so when I moved to New York, the idea was that I would be in theater somehow. I don't know, as an actress, as a producer, I don't know. I'm going to be in the theater. And it's really, really hard to break in. But also, it became really clear to me very quickly that although I really enjoyed acting in a lot of the little community playhouses and some professional theater and stuff in Ohio, that I didn't really want to be an actor.
Okay.
Whenever I started seeing the competition here and the skills that people have and the training and the enthusiasm and drive and the energy to put into it, it was really evident. No, I just kind of like doing it for fun. What I really enjoyed is putting on a show. And when I was a kid growing up, I was pretty poor. We didn't have a house. Mm-hmm. We lived in a tent and a tin shed and some.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah.
In Texas?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And a trailer, and the trailer got repossessed, and yeah. So I spent a lot of time by myself, without money and without parental guidance, and I produced shows. I wrote and produced a puppet show that I sold tickets to, and I made a program. I had concessions. I had a concession stand, and I made popcorn and Kool-Aid. And people came, and they came to see the show. They bought tickets. They bought concessions, and I put on the puppet show.
What was it called?
It was Peanuts. It was the Peanuts.
Uh-huh.
I made these papier-mâché puppets of Lucy and Charlie Brown and all that. So it wasn't
an
original. It was an original script, but
yeah,
not original characters.
Right.
And when I look back on that, I was like, holy crap, that was basically the origin story of QED.
Yes, and the sweetest origin story.
I was, this little kid producing a show. As a kid, I didn't know that that was something you could do for a living. And so I had always thought I wanted to be an actor. I wanted to be on stage. And the truth is, no, I had been doing what I wanted to do this whole time.
Oh my God.
I just didn't have a word for it. And putting on a show, bringing people together, and having this shared experience, that's what I've always really enjoyed. And so when I moved to New York, quickly realized I didn't want to be an actor. I did want to be involved, though. Mm-hmm. And so I started doing promotions and marketing for off-Broadway and Broadway shows. I had already been doing marketing a little bit for liquor companies and cigarette companies, like the kind of brand ambassador type event.
Were you a shot girl? Is that what you're saying?
I managed the shot girls.
You managed the shot girls.
Yeah.
I always want to write a comedy script about shot girls that are like, I don't know, shot girls with bad attitudes. Yeah.
It was pretty wild. It was a lot of fun. I actually lived on the Cuervo Nation for a little bit.
Where is that?
It's a little private island in the Caribbean off the coast of Tortola. And it's a 5-acre piece of land. It's technically called Marina Cay, C-A-Y. But for a few weeks of each year, several times a year, it was called the Cuervo Nation. And we applied for the United Nations to recognize us. We had our own flag and our Pledge of Allegiance. And yeah, we would live on this island, and it was debaucherous and ridiculous and fun and a lot of drinking.
So was that part of, like, this is fascinating to me. Was that used for promotion, or was that just like a fun part of the job?
It was used for promotion. Basically, all the shot girls around the country would enter people to win a trip to the Cuervo Nation,
where
I was one of the hosts.
Shot John, Girl Island.
Yeah. John Hodgman actually tells a story about the Cuervo Nation on This American Life years ago about this one guy, Ryan, but being the Cuervo man, but I was just the female version. It was a lot of fun. But I used a lot of that marketing skill and knowledge in helping me transition to a more appropriate gig. I also had I've got a degree as a paralegal, so I was working at a law firm in Rockefeller Center, and then that's how I paid the bills and got my health insurance and my golden handcuffs, as it were.
Yep.
At night, I ran my own networking company, and I was doing these marketing and promotional gigs, just kind of gig life a little bit, trying to make something happen. And eventually, I started blogging, and I went to a couple of comedy shows to see some bloggers do stand-up for the first time.
Oh, cool.
Todd Levin is one. He had a site called Tremble.com.
Oh.
And it was his very first night ever doing comedy.
Oh, my God.
At a place called the Gershwin Hotel. The hotel is still there. The show was called Portable Comedy, and it was just a fun little kind of back room comedy show. And it was run by my now husband, Christian Finnegan. Mm-hmm. But at the time, I only knew him as a fellow blogger. For his site was called Tower of Hubris.
Wait, and did you have your own blog?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What was it called?
Oh, it's just Cambry Cruise. I mean, my name's Cambry Cruise. So, why do you call anything other than just Cambry?
The early days of blogging. Who knows? Yeah.
The portable comedy shows where I met Christian we all kind of just hung out at comedy shows. I started going to more and more of them. I had gone to them before. And Christian and I actually had a few mutual friends in common. Eric Drysdale and I had met before, and
he was a Colbert writer, right?
Yeah,
he was there when I was interning at Colbert many years ago. Yeah.
Well, before that, he was with The Daily Show, and he won 9 Emmys for that, and then he won a few more Emmys for the Colbert Report, and then now he's at Samantha Bee.
Oh my God!
Yeah. So it quickly became evident to me that comedians were terrible at self-promotion, and producing a comedy show was a heck of a lot easier than producing off-Broadway and Broadway. With those shows, there's unions and contracts and theater. It's just a lot of moving parts, lot of people, and with people come difficulties.
Yes.
And then, and money and time. With comedy, I could go to a back room in the Gershwin Hotel, mm-hmm. put up a microphone, and suddenly, voila.
And that's it. Make some money, maybe?
Yeah. No, honestly, making money was not even really. It was more the passion of kind of going back to that Peanuts puppet show.
Yeah.
You know, just wanting to be involved in something and creating something and bringing people together.
And I think you have to have that. Otherwise, the money won't come either.
Yeah,
you know,
true.
You can feel when something is devoid of just, I don't know, passion and excitement.
Yeah. But yeah, so I started doing PR and marketing for comedians. That's how I made the transition from liquor and big brands and Broadway to comedy.
So you were working for specific comedians?
Mm. Yeah, Ophira Eisenberg was
one. Oh, she's the best.
Yeah, I did a little work for David Koechner and a lot of tour stuff. I did the comedy tour for Eugene Merman, Mark Maron.
That's amazing.
And Andy Kindler, the three of them. I forget the name of the tour. I'm kind of spacing on it. But so when somebody needed... It was a very finite project.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of project-based PR.
Okay.
So they went on a tour. The tour was from, let's say, April to June.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm doing is just that one little target.
Okay.
Which actually worked really well when it comes to having this day job. But eventually I did quit the day job, decided to cut off the golden handcuffs and... Oh, that's
it's
a scary.
Scary.
It's a very
I did
scary.
It, yeah, yeah, I did it last year. Super scary.
Very, very, very.
So then did you go to comics or were you just freelancing for a while?
I freelanced for a short, hot minute. It wasn't very long before word kind of got around that I was the PR person for mm-hmm. comedians. And so when this new comedy club, Comics, was opening up and they were interviewing PR people, my name was thrown in. I interviewed, but I was getting married to Christian at mm-hmm. around the time of their opening. My wedding date was August 12th and their opening was September 1st or something. Yeah, so the timing wasn't quite right. They had, they used an outside big PR company to handle the opening because you're talking, it's a tremendous undertaking. And then once the opening was done, then I came in and I became their in-house publicist.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and it actually worked out really well. So I was there almost from day one, about 2 weeks after they opened. And in-house publicist there. And about a year of doing PR for them, and I produced some things there. I produced a music comedy show called Live Wire. My first guest on that show was Lin-Manuel Miranda from Freestyle Love Supreme, Chris Jackson, and then an opera singer from Australia.
What did you have them do?
They did some like freestyle rap. Are you familiar with Freestyle Love Supreme?
No.
Okay, we used to have Freestyle Love Supreme at Comics once a month, and it's just an incredible group of guys. It's a rotating cast a little bit, but they do a lot of freestyle rap that is just so fun and so wild. And there was a section of their show where they would do a historical rap. So they would, So cool. The whole Hamilton thing was not a surprise to me because every single month they were all freestyle rapping about the founding fathers.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Or other historical figures and stuff. But so I was producing and doing PR for them. But they had this basement space that was supposed to be like a private event room.
Uh huh.
But it was very small.
Okay.
The location was awkward because it was right by the only bathrooms, the public bathrooms, and they didn't have a way to block the view of people coming down from the public bathroom or from the theater to the public bathrooms. So if you were having a private event, all these people would be like flowing through in and out. Yeah, it was a really...
Today that would be called the podcast space.
Yeah, it just wasn't...
working.
Yeah. So it sat empty and... So I was like, hey, do you guys mind if I, do something with this space? And so I paid a portion of the electricity and the employment costs. There was a set fee that I had to pay each month that came out. And then I shared the profits of whatever was made down there. And they basically gave me free rein to do whatever I wanted because it was just wasted space.
Yeah.
So I called it Ochi's Lounge. And a lot of people, Mike Drucker included, might remember, a lot of people I know remember Ochi's Lounge. It was a very cool space.
What is Ochi?
So if you look at the logo, Ochi's Lounge, a lot of people are like, oh, it was named after the bathroom attendant. And they're like, yeah, but his name was King. And I'm like, well, it was named for the bathroom attendant. So there was this man, King, who sat down there by himself until I opened Ochi's. He was just alone down there almost the entire night until somebody would use the bathroom. And he was there to just monitor the bathrooms. He was from Nigeria. And this was right after 9/11. So when I was thinking about naming the room, I wanted to name it after him. But I was like, I can't name it King's Room. I mean, because he's going to be the only one down there for good portions of time. This is his room. Mm-hmm. So I should name it after him. And how funny would that be, right? Mm-hmm. But so I was like, I'm not naming it King's Room. I mean, it's in the basement next to a bathroom. Let's not get ridiculous here. King, I didn't like the sound of it. And, and so I was like, well, King, what's your actual name? Because I know that's a nickname. What's your real name? And he said, it's Muhammad. And I'm like, well, not naming it Muhammad's Room.
Right.
Post 9/11 in the meatpack. Yeah,
exactly.
No. So I'm like, well, where are you from? And he's in Nigeria. And what language do you speak? And so I looked up his language, the word for laughter or laughs in his native language, and the word is Ochi.
That's so cool. What a great story.
Yeah. And then if you look at the logo, and when I tell people this, they're like, oh, that's great. And but a lot of people miss this part in the logo, in the O. The O is this male bathroom symbol. The universal symbol.
Oh, that's so funny.
So that's what makes this the center of the O is a male bathroom attendant with holding a microphone.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Ochi's Lounge.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And we had like, it was so crazy how many really, really famous people would perform down there, mainly because of the location.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the Meatpacking District. It's not too far from the Cellar and all the, you know, hot little tiny clubs. Eastville hadn't been open yet, but, you know, it just where if you're out doing sets all night, you could guarantee that if you swung by, you could get a spot.
Right.
So it had that going for it. And then, of course, the upstairs space was a 400-seat theater, and it had headliners there. So sometimes the headliners would pop up there and then pop down.
That's so cool.
Yeah, and Jim Gaffigan was a pretty much regular.
Oh, my God.
But then everybody, like Zach Galifianakis, and for some reason, Governor Mike Huckabee. I know my husband's like, you know he's evil, right?
wait, he wanted to perform?
He was on a show where they interviewed him, and it was very... What is frightening is he's very charming and very funny.
It's the worst. You're like, you've got this down. You're evil and but you're very fun to chat with.
But I'm trying to think who else, like Pat Kiernan was down there. And
so you would throw shows while the upstairs shows were going on or cool.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah,
oh, that's
it
so
was
cool.
Just a little independent venue space that had a lot of... It had its flaws, like any bar room space it does.
Yes.
The main being that it was the main room for the bathroom. The flow. Because, 400 people suddenly have been let out of a theater and now need to go to the bathroom. So
yeah.
But it also meant a lot of people going to the bathroom were like, what's this magic happening down here?
Oh, that's so cool. So from there, so then comics... closed, right? The basement, did it flooded or something?
The kitchen flooded one time. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I'm definitely going to write a book someday about running your own small business, and it's going to be like choose your own adventure. And so it's everything is like, so you open a podcast studio. Do you put it in the basement? Do you put it on the roof or in the ceiling? And then you turn to page 101. The basement floods. Every story ends with the basement flooding. The basement, if you have a basement, it will flood. And
we are currently in a basement, I should say, in the basement of QED in their lovely podcast studio.
And it has flooded twice.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Both times the first year it was open, but still, you know, it's kind of the cost of doing business and having a space. Things break. Things happen. Ceilings leak. But yeah, when comics closed, it took the it took Ochi's with it. So
yeah. So did you want to move it, or what was your...
I immediately moved it to this little place called Luca Lounge with my friend Carol Hartzell, who now works on Samantha Bee as well.
Oh, cool.
And worked at Colbert for a hot minute, Stephen Colbert's late night, CBS show. She and I struck up a deal with the owner of Luca.
Was that in the East Village?
Yeah. 14th and Avenue A.
And my friend fell asleep there.
Oh, my God.
And we couldn't wake him up. He was so drunk. Anyway, I remember that place.
That place was wild. There was, I know I booked Jay Farrow. Jay had just gotten on SNL. Nobody knew who he was yet. And I booked him. He wanted to do more stand-up. And I booked him on a show at Luca. And we were stoked to have him, but it was raining. And Luca, man, it was a mess. That place was so weird. Mm-hmm. And so everybody was sitting in the showroom with umbrellas open because it rained in the showroom. It didn't leak. It rained. So people were wearing raincoats and umbrellas. It was so bad.
Oh, my God.
It was bad.
That is so funny.
It was weird. And the bathrooms, there were only two stalls. One was always broken. The other one, the owner was always... It was never stocked. It was always on the fritz. And yeah, it was weird. It was weird and bad. And I knew it immediately, but we didn't want to lose the momentum of Ochi's.
Yeah.
Where do we go with it? But then around then is when I had my book was coming out.
What's your book?
My book is a memoir called Burn Down the Ground. And it's about growing up in poverty in Texas. My whole family's deaf.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so about my deaf family, what it's like to live with deaf people as a hearing kid, growing up poor, and then my dad tried to kill my mom and another lady, so he's in jail. Yeah.
Wow, you've been through some shit.
Yeah, now you know why I'm in comedy.
Well, congratulations on that book, which came out a while ago, but that's
wonderful. 2012.
That's very exciting.
Yeah, so when the book came out, I was like, I'm going to focus on that, do the tours and reboot. And I did that for 2 years.
And so you were just like, okay, Ochi's not, we're taking some time off of that, just doing the book stuff. Cool.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. And the book touring and all that promotion, and I did a solo show, which I'm resurrecting actually here at
wonderful.
QED on the 18th, June 18th.
Great.
I don't know when this drops, but if it's...
Well, we could try to get it out by then.
You can cut this out.
It's good to talk about it anyway, because if you keep doing it,
I'll probably
do it again.
I'll do it again, because I definitely want to get it on tape. Right now, I'm just calling it Burn Down the Ground, but
great.
I feel like it needs to be something else. I don't know. I've got a couple of solo shows in me, so those are coming out soon. But yeah, once the book tour kind of wound down, I was like, what would make me happy? There's something nobody warned me about until after I was living in it, was there's a thing called post-publication depression.
I totally know. I mean, I have not published a book, but I totally know what you're talking about. And yeah, like I just had a piece come out in the New Yorker, and I was like, this is the best day of my life. Yeah. And then the next day was like, this is the worst day of my life.
Yeah. Exactly. So,
I can't even imagine on a bigger scale of a book. Yeah.
You absolutely know that anytime you make something, that is the best thing. And then it's all in the rear view. The best thing you've ever done is in your past. Yeah. What the hell are you going to do now?
Yeah.
And so I had a lot of that. And I have a cabin upstate, and there was this church for sale down the road from my cabin. And it was ridiculously cheap and ridiculously gorgeous. And churches are basically theaters. And so I'm like, oh, my gosh, I could buy this church. And there's a 4-bedroom house that comes with it.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. It was ridiculous. I still dream and fantasize about, like, what would have happened if I'd gotten it. But I had all these plans, like, okay, Bethel Woods, where Woodstock took place, is right down the road. You could have your programming based on what's happening at Bethel Woods. So you make sure all the tourists are in town. So if there's some dumb country singer they're not dumb. Okay.
But, yeah.
some country singer who's headlining Bethel Woods, you book maybe a I don't know, a get her done type comic.
Oh,
you
yeah.
see what
okay.
I'm saying?
Like
either counter programming or complementary programming, right. depending on what's happening there. And then you could have the comedian and their family stay in the 4-bedroom parsonage, perform. And then when the headliners aren't there during the week or during the off season, then it would become like a community space.
And I want you to do that.
I know, right? but, you know, it's sleepy up there.
Yeah.
Upstate's a little sleepy. And it also meant, and this is what the deal breaker was, it meant that I would have to live up there.
That's true.
And my husband is not living up there.
Right.
We live here in Queens. And so I was very frustrated. I cried a lot over it because I felt like, if not there, where? Because mm-hmm. I can't afford New York. New York is impossible. Mm-hmm. And so I talked it over with my husband and I said, you know, it doesn't even have to be very big, just a little space. And we were walking in our neighborhood and we passed by this little restaurant cafe that wasn't anything special. It was mm-hmm. rinky dink. And we were like, yeah, like, you know, this little cafe, it doesn't even have to be bigger than that. If like that cafe came up for rent,
uh-huh.
that would be perfect. It's close enough to the house where we could walk or bike mm-hmm. over to it. And it's off on our side street, so it's not on a main thoroughfare where the rent's going to be jacked up. And it's small enough, so I probably could afford it.
Mm-hmm.
And if that place became available for rent, then I would take that. That would be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And then literally the very next day, there was a for rent sign on it. And I was like, oh, hello,
that's
universe.
Wow.
Hello, universe.
So is that where we are now?
No. No. Wow. No, that place is now a weird happy ending massage
parlor. Oh, really?
Parlor.
I was going to go with vape shop, but yeah,
no.
Okay.
It's a very weird after hours happy ending spot. But it was enough of a sign from the universe. I mean,
yeah.
gee, mini Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not paying attention to that, then
yeah,
you need your eyes checked. So I started very earnestly looking for space and trying to learn how to open a business in New York.
Yeah, how do you do that? That was I wrote some questions down. The first one is just, how do you do this?
Well, I did it alone.
Oh, my God.
I did it alone.
What year is this?
2014.
Okay.
2018 is the current year. I signed the lease.
Thank you.
July 30th, 2014.
Okay.
And we were open October 12th. Soft opening, which is David Lee Roth's 60th birthday in 2014. It was his 60th birthday. So that was the soft opening. And then November 1st was our official opening.
Great.
So not only I did it alone, and I did it in less than 3 months. That is, in retrospect, one of the most wildest things. I cannot believe that I did it.
I wouldn't even know where to start.
Well, I did a couple of things in the wrong order.
Okay.
Which I would say, to do it again now, I would make sure I already had a contractor that I know and trusted
mm-hmm.
that went with me to see a space, and I got my estimates and stuff, because I didn't have a contractor hired. So when I signed the lease for this and it needed work done, I then started shopping around for contractors and trying to get somebody to commit to it. It could have been a disaster. I could have had a real difficult. Thankfully, a local business owner who owns Rocky's, the bar on the corner,
mm-hmm.
kind of a rough and tumble. It's not a dive bar. It's beautiful, but the clientele is a little like motorcycle gangy.
I like that bar.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. Order a glass of wine. Jeez.
They fill it to the top?
A goblet. You basically get a magnum of wine.
See, this is why ordering wine at like rougher bars, where they only have, do you want red or white? Like
yes.
A lot of people are like, oh, I would never. I'm
no.
You're going to get so much wine. You're going to get
That's the only place to order wine. To take it from me.
Oh, we're out of wine glasses. Do you want it in a pint? Sure, fine.
Here, just take the bottle. He thankfully hooked me up with a really great guy. And so that was one mistake I'd made. And then a couple of just novice, newbie things. Like, I didn't realize that in order to get insurance, like workers' comp insurance mm-hmm. and stuff, you actually need to put the wheels in motion first and foremost. I just thought insurance, you call a broker, you get insurance.
Yeah.
And it's a little more complicated than that when it comes to a commercial space. So those two things were, like, in retrospect, I would make sure I had my ducks in a row before. But the rest of it, to be honest, you're dealing with the city, and that makes people like tense up and be like, oh God, forget that. How hard is it?
Yeah.
But I have to say, everybody's really nice. They want you to open a new business. New York State, definitely New York City. Mm-hmm. They want you to open a business. They want you to help the community and employ people. And you'd be surprised at how they'll hold your hand through the whole process.
Wow.
And answer questions. And even some of the more difficult things, like getting a health inspection, that was probably the hardest thing, understanding the whole process of that. That they want you to do well. They don't want to close. They don't want to give you a failing grade for your health inspection and stuff. They want you to be open. So listen to them, be kind to them, and smile and be happy and thankful, and you'll get all of that in return tenfold.
What were you most nervous about when you were preparing to open? What were you?
Oh, geez. No, yeah, you got
It's just so much.
It's so much.
It's the shows. It's the programming. Mm. It's the space. It's what do you have at the bar? It's how many seats do you make? It's what furniture do you use? Like everything.
Yeah, the furniture, finding tables and chairs was a lot harder than I expected.
Yeah.
But really, I didn't worry about finding shows. People want to perform, and I have enough people that I know from Ochi's mm-hmm. and comics. And mm-hmm. I also, after comics, I booked the 92Y Tribeca's comedy.
Very cool.
I was their comedy booker for a good year and a half, 2 years.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, I have enough street cred in mm-hmm. the comedy community to say, hey, if I'm opening up a space, people will know that it's a well-run, good space.
Right.
Right? So that helped. But whether would people come? Well, people who are producing their shows, they want people there. So mm-hmm. they're going to help spread the word for you mm-hmm. and just have patience and slowly build. So for Ochi's Lounge, for example, we were only open Wednesday through Saturday. Mm-hmm. So just a few nights a week, one show a night. And then we gradually grew to 5 days a week, two shows a night, three shows. You know, it just you kind of slowly build.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we did with QED.
Were you guys one show a night when you started?
Yeah, one show a night.
And now it's two every night?
It's three, sometimes four a night.
Wow.
Which is including open mics.
Okay,
but still,
yes.
Open mics are a show. And some more than others, you know, depending on who turns out. And sometimes audience does and sometimes they don't. But the programming of it and everything, that didn't worry me.
Mm-hmm.
Community support was vital. Mm-hmm. But I know... I wish I could put myself back in that headspace. I'd have to look at my journal and be like, wonder
what. Do you journal? That's so good.
I do, yeah.
I should journal.
Yeah, morning pages, but I don't really always do them in the morning, and I don't, actually, I have one. Don't ignore the Brave thing. It was a gift.
She's got a notebook that says Brave on it.
Yeah. My friend Lauren gave me a pack of journals. One of them says Brave, though, and that's a little corny, but I love Lauren, so I'm not.
I used to work at BarnesandNoble.com, so I would but they. I worked on the same floor as the gift, like the gift section. So I got like blankets and games and millions of notebooks, They say the dumbest shit on them, and I'm like, I don't care. I haven't been at that job. I left that job in 2015, and I'm still using those notebooks.
Yeah.
So anyway,
journals, pens, and stationery note cards. It's my weakness. That's definitely my kryptonite.
Just buying those all the time.
Just wanting them all. Well, and that's actually another great thing about QED is it does give me that outlet to have that need to have a little. I had when I was a kid, I had turned my bedroom into a library. It was a fully functional library.
The cutest kid.
Dewey Decimal System, library cards. I had patrons. They checked out books. Yeah. So having that bookshop upstairs is basically my little... It combines everything. Seriously, everything I was doing as a kid. So if you're wondering what to do with your life, what were you doing at 8, 9 years old?
Oh, my God.
That's
beautiful. So did you know, for example, that you wanted to sell stuff? Like, did you want to just sell books? And how did you decide about the bar? And what, like, were you like, I want popcorn or I don't want food? Or, I mean, it's all very...
I'm not a I'm not a restaurant owner.
Yeah.
I don't want to be a restaurant owner.
Right.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
I definitely understand and recognize that that's where a lot of profit comes from.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not in the restaurant business.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be in the restaurant business. I could take on a partner who's in the restaurant business. But after having gotten burned with Comics and Ochi's and then Luca, no.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm doing this by myself.
Mm-hmm.
I know how to run a theater. I don't know how to run a bar. Let me just run the bar. And then once I get the bar in place, then I can start adding food
okay.
and little things here and there. We tried a hot dog machine. We thought about maybe nachos and stuff. And every time we start to do it and start to think about it, it becomes an almost immediate no.
For like there's no space or no, who's going to do it?
It's not the space. And it is a little bit about who's going to do it. It does become a staffing thing. But we could ostensibly turn some of this basement space into a working kitchen.
Oh.
The basement's huge. There's
yeah.
room for it.
Yeah.
There's room for it. And I did upgrade our point of sale system so that we could eventually add ticketed, you know, kitchen, you know, how it sends a ticket to the kitchen
yes.
and that. So we have that in place if we did want to graduate. But at the end of the day, I don't want a Yelp review based on the nachos.
Shows being soggy or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, you, that's a really good point.
So whenever, especially when we first opened, this question came up a lot. And I was like, look, there's a lot of bars and a lot of restaurants that happen to have a side room where they put on shows.
Mm-hmm.
But their main business, they're a bar. They're
right.
a restaurant. And they occasionally put on a show or,
yeah.
or put on a lot of shows, whatever. But they're a bar or a restaurant. I want to be a theater that happens to serve some beer.
Yeah.
And you can happen to grab some wine and some popcorn.
Great.
But first and foremost, we're a performance space. We have classes, we have shows, and we happen to have a concession stand.
Was it so because of that, it's important that you charge people for tickets?
I do think it's important to charge no matter, because that adds value.
Yeah.
And it sets an expectation
yeah.
on the audience's behalf and the producer's behalf, the comedians who are on the show. It sets
absolutely
a level of expertise is the wrong word, but just it elevates it.
Do you feel like frustrated at all by how many free shows there are? Like, I have a free Monday show every week, you know?
No, free shows are fun. Our open mics are free.
Mm-hmm.
We do encourage people to make a purchase from QED, which, mm-hmm. You know, that's if you talk to me and Chris Gersbeck, who's the right hand man here at QED, mm-hmm. if you ask us, one of our biggest pet peeves is the whole
bringing. Which I always do. I love talking about pet peeves.
Bringing in outside food and drinks.
Yeah.
Bringing in a Starbucks or a Dunkin' Donuts to a place that serves coffee. Can I curse? No.
Yes, yes. Oh, please.
Go fuck yourself. What? Who would do that?
Yeah.
And then when places close, they're like, oh, I love that place. Well, really? Did you? Because you bought your coffee at Dunkin' Donuts.
Right.
And maybe we don't have the best coffee. Maybe it's 50 cents more.
But this is
supporting. Dunkin' Donuts giving you stage time?
Right, right.
Is Starbucks allowing you to learn crochet and give you? Yeah, it's very frustrating.
If you want to be part of this community, you have to give back. You can't just take, take, take. And I mm-hmm. feel like there's a lot of people who just come in and take, take, take. And I think a lot of them are young and a lot of them
we've all been starving.
Life experience, but
we've all been starving artists. We're not asking for you to buy a $10 soda.
No.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree. I don't want to make excuses for them, but I don't get. I try to like think about like where they're coming from because I can find myself getting like very angry about that kind of stuff. But yeah, if you're listening and you go to QED, buy a thing to support the community and to support QED, which is a great place to give.
Well,
like
there are a few folks who come here that I definitely know. You know, they're struggling. They're barely making their rent and everything. We're not going to tell them they can't perform. Of
right.
course not. No,
right.
that's not. You know, we want to be welcoming and embrace everyone. And it's hard. New York is hard and it's expensive. But you know, maybe if you're here a few times for an open mic, maybe buy one thing out of every three or four
right,
times. You know,
right.
do at least try.
Yeah.
And you're getting your soda or your Kind Bar from somewhere.
Right.
Maybe make it QED.
Yeah.
I know that it's 50 cents cheaper at the deli.
But
the deli's not giving you stage time.
Right. The deli is not going to... Yeah. Be good for your career later on.
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing is, yeah, you never know who at the clubs are going to be someone down the road.
Uh-huh.
You never know who the door person is or the bartender.
Mm-hmm.
We're all in the entertainment business, and eventually that person at the door that you were rude to because you brought in your McDonald's or your pizza slice when they clearly have a sign that says no outside food and drink and you throw a hissy fit. Well, guess what? That door person that you threw a hissy fit to now works at Comedy Central and is the executive. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. No. Yeah. Be kind because it's good for you.
Well, yeah.
How many employees do you have here?
Well, we try to keep it under 10 just mm-hmm. because then for legal purposes,
okay.
Anytime you have over 10, it kind of throws you into a new bracket.
Okay.
Yeah. So keeping us as a small business under 10, that doesn't include, of course, all the 1099 employees like comedians and producers and
right.
teachers and stuff.
Okay.
Those are freelance 1099 employees, but actually salaried. Or bartenders and stuff. We try to keep it under 10.
That's great.
Yeah.
So you've got Chris that helps you run this.
This podcast studio. He definitely was a big champion of this. So you can thank him for this
is
lovely
awesome.
Sounding
this
room
is, oh,
and all this
wonderful.
Equipment. Yeah.
I literally taped my last one just on my iPhone in a hotel room. So this is good. But I was in Atlanta. So what can you do?
Yeah. What can you do?
So I'm trying to think. Let me go over my questions here. Okay.
I love your journal too. I just noticed.
This is another one. Yeah. This is like another old one from my.
That's a good one.
Oh, so I was going to ask you why Astoria, and also
because
you live here, but also sorry. I kind of want to talk about there's some magic here where I feel like every show that I do here, the audience, there's always like these two guys I recognize that are here like all the time. But
Colin and Sanjay.
Yeah. They're wonderful.
I know exactly who you
I
mean.
I feel like they embody the spirit of the QED audience, which is we're game. We're here for you to try weird stuff. And we are non-judgmental. Mm-hmm. We want to laugh. And that is not the going attitude for comedy shows in New York City. And how did you do that? Tell me the magic.
Well, to answer your question on why Astoria,
yeah.
I've lived only in Astoria when I moved to New York. 18 mm-hmm. years. I've never lived anywhere else. Same apartment for 15.
Oh, my God.
Longest I've ever lived anywhere my whole life.
Wow.
The same apartment. That just boggles the mind. Boggles.
Yeah.
So, of course, I want to have something in my own neighborhood because I love and live in this neighborhood, but also because I can afford it.
Yeah.
It's like, let's be frank. But there's nothing like this anywhere in Astoria. Christian, my husband, is a comedian, and he and I have performed in Astoria once in mm-hmm. 18 years.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, at Albatross. Marianne Cirque was on the show. I remember she was on the show. I don't know if it was her show or she happened to be another comedian
okay.
that was booked on it. But, that's the only time. And to go out at night, we would never think to go out in our own neighborhood except
yeah.
to have dinner and drinks. And every now and then, trivia.
Mm-hmm.
And every now and then, that trivia, we would have like five people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just never – it was always in a bar and just – yeah, just not – nothing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that. But how do you create a space that's welcoming? There are a few key elements, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think it does help that it's woman-owned
mm-hmm.
and operated. I do think that brings a definite different energy. That I'm an active and participatory owner.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of comedy clubs, the owner is, you don't even know who they are.
Yeah.
So it's more of a job to the people around that I don't know how much of a factor that is.
Well, I think also the fact that you, like, not only you perform too, like the fact that you can get on stage, you know how what it feels like to be on a stage that's too high, you know, like like you know all these things.
Well,
that...
and when I was looking for spaces, I definitely had some things in mind that were key, but there are certain things that are beyond your control. And but the stage, I built the stage, so I know not to have it too far off the ground. And that I knew. And
what were some of the things that were not on
the,
in your
certain
control?
Things that are not in your control? Where the bathroom is located.
Okay,
I would not want the bathroom next to the stage, of course. But where else is it? In this particular space, it's right by the stage.
Yeah,
and we played with other ideas on how to have the room configured and everything, but that it is what it is.
Right.
Eventually, we could add another bathroom, but that's a really expensive proposition, plus it involves the Department of Buildings and permits, and it's complicated. And I don't own this building. I am on a 10-year lease, and after 10 years maybe I'll decide that's enough for me, or if I do renew it, then maybe if I renewed it for another 10, then maybe I might build another bathroom.
But... Was it scary to sign a 10-year lease?
No, actually a 10-year lease is better. It's really difficult to get a 10-year lease in New York now. It's much, much better because you can get out of a lease. A commercial lease, they have these clauses where you can get out of it or whatever, you know. But it's much better to have a longer term one. So for negotiations of leases and stuff, especially in this climate, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, so that's like the bathroom location, you know, whether the trains are running, the ceiling height. You know, I didn't want a place with really high ceilings, and this one happened to have pretty decent size height ceilings, but low enough where it kept the acoustics really sweet.
The acoustics are good,
The acoustics are phenomenal.
Yeah. I did a show in a tin can yesterday, and it hurt my feelings.
And I do think even something as simple as the paint color, I got some pushback from some early helpers, I guess you would say. They were volunteers / contributors to some crowdsourcing ideas and stuff. And I got some pushback when I chose the paint colors. They were like, well, no, it's a comedy club. It's got to be dark. I'm like, yeah, the lights are going to be off and this paint color will be dark enough.
Yeah.
But
I'm struggling to even... It's blue. The stage...
It's like a teal, dark teal.
Okay, And is that all over all the walls?
All of them. Okay. Almost all of them, yeah. And it was important to me, though, that it looked good during the day.
Yeah.
I want it for private events and classes, and I want it to be a versatile space.
Mm-hmm.
And the comedy clubs that I've worked in the past, it was very difficult to rent the space with the word comedy club in the title.
Oh, interesting.
And... also with dark black walls.
It does feel very cold in so many,
when you go in during the day, it just feels like you're in a bar that should not have been seen at this time, like a vampire almost.
Yeah.
Like, no, they're usually in their coffins right now. Please, put them back.
Don't look too closely at, like, the tables or the floor.
So... But yeah, having the name comedy club in the title, and comics was one of the worst names I've ever worked with for any venue. Yeah, it was comics with an X, which is actually graphic novels, not comedy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and there was a comics with an X on 14th Street, just a block and a half down the road.
Oh, my God.
And then when you're on the radio... having to say
comics with an X.
Comics. Well, when it sounds, oh, where are you working at? Comics. Well, comics is a COMICS, so you'd have to say comics with an X. And anytime I took Janine Garofalo, like on our morning radio tours and stuff, she would always call me out, like, Carrie's going to get mad at me if I don't say comics with an X.
Oh, interesting. So how did you – so you knew you didn't want to put comedy club in the title of QED. Mm-hmm. What does QED stand for, and how did you decide on it?
QED is quod erat demonstrandum, which is Latin for that which can be demonstrated.
Okay.
It's a math thing, and I'm a math nerd. When I was in 10th grade, geometry proofs is where I learned it. But at the end of your proof, you would write QED, which basically means – there, I've shown you my work, and I've proven my work, and it's shown above. Look above, you know, and I've written it all out. And so, QED, you're showing your work either as a comedian or as a teacher, teaching how to crochet, or we've had henna tattoo classes and swing dancing.
I want to hear more about these classes.
Yeah. Well, summertime slows down, so there's not too many on the books right now. But yeah, in the fall we have knitting and crochet.
So it would be like is it like a one-time, like Saturday afternoon?
Generally speaking, Generally speaking, one-shot deal, 2 hours or less. So it's low commitment, which means low dollar commitment. Because a lot of times I want to take some classes and it's like $200-$300.
Yeah.
It's just out of your budget.
I don't know if I like crocheting.
I
want to find out.
I don't know. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So do you feel like those are a good way to get people from the community out into the space during the daytimes?
For sure. And to also make it clear that there's more to the space than a comedy club.
Yeah.
Because comedy clubs have sometimes a negative connotation for the novice club goer.
Mm-hmm.
They think 2-drink minimum, jacked up prices, weak drinks, and iffy comedy, or hit or miss. They're not skilled audience members, so they don't know the difference between an open mic versus so they come to thinking they're going to a comedy club and they come to the open mic and they're like, that was terrible.
And I was like, well, it was supposed to be.
And what did you think? And so it's really important to have it be known as something beyond that.
Yeah. Do you have any advice that we haven't gone over for anyone listening who's considering opening their own comedy club or space, performance space?
Well, I think anybody can go and find a back room. And I do think that it's important if you're struggling to get stage time, or maybe you're not understanding why you're not getting booked or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
If you run your own show, even if it's just one show rather than a whole room, you'll learn very quickly what you might be doing wrong by pitching when you're approaching a producer. And I know I listened to Marianne's. Marianne Ways was on your show, and her pet peeve about people coming up to her while she's working.
Yeah.
And asking her that's a real terrible no-no.
Yeah.
And I think
does that happen to you a lot too?
It does. While I've got my arms full of empty glasses and I'm clearly busy
working.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you want me to talk about dates on the calendar? I don't even have my laptop or my journal or nothing. Maybe just
send me an
email. I
want something from you while you're cleaning up glasses. Like, it's just, it makes you feel terrible, too.
And I understand the impulse. The impulse is, I'm here.
Yeah.
She's here. I don't want to let this opportunity pass.
Yeah.
And I would say my biggest advice is to say, I know you're busy, so is it okay if I email you?
Yes.
Oh, great.
That is great.
What is your email? It's on the website. Fabulous.
Wonderful.
That's real quick, real simple.
Yeah.
And, and then also the DMs were another pet peeve of Marianne's, and that's definitely
on Facebook.
Yeah, on my Facebook profile. If you go to it right now, you know how it says it's got your little bio. Mine is I don't use Facebook Messenger.
Good.
And people still will message me business related stuff, but I don't even open it. It's not read. If you've sent me a Facebook message, it is not read.
Yeah, I get that. I get about like 25 messages a week for shows, and I don't even own a space or run Butterboy, and it's I guess that's the best way to get me, but I totally see
Is it the best way to get you? And if you don't have your...
I do like email, honestly.
If you don't have your email on your website, change that ASAP.
Yeah.
Change it. If you don't have your email address available on your Facebook about section, your Twitter bio section, change that. Mm-hmm. Fix that right now. Put your email address. Make it available. If you don't want everyone knowing your email address, make up a dummy one that you check or have forwarded, but have it available.
That's very smart.
And DMing me, not only is it an invasion of my fun time. I like Facebook for fun. Of course, I use it to promote every now and then, but really I keep in touch with my nieces, my high school friends and family, whatever nonsense. A lot of dogs, a lot of puppies, otters.
Yeah.
But there are also Twitter DMs, Instagram DMs, comments. Yeah. It's too much.
It's kind of hard to keep track of all of it.
And my email is readily available. But here, and more importantly, is if this is a business-related email, it's eventually, or a contact, it's going to have to be an email so that I can loop the staff in. So
smart.
We can, you know, I've got stuff so I can search it and see if something happens down the road. I can search my email thread and find it. And
right.
We can communicate. It's a better way of communicating. It's the only way, really.
When you guys book shows here, what are you looking for? Like if there's comedians listening who are like, I would love to produce a show at QED, what kind of thing? Yeah. What kind of shows do you want and what kind of producers do you want? And
Well, that's what's great about QED is that it is a low stakes venue. Ochi's Lounge, also a very low stakes venue. It's a really great place for somebody to try their chops and start out. If you've never produced a show, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Certain clubs, they're going to want you to have more experience. They're mm-hmm. a larger room. They've got more seats to fill. Their rent is higher. So honestly, looking at their calendar, attending their shows, getting a sense of the style of the place and the feel of their programming is always helpful. But a place like QED, smaller places like QED, that's where you're going to be able to try some weird stuff. Like mm-hmm. Mike Drucker is a skilled and seasoned producer. He was an Ochi's Lounge adopter, adoptee early. I know Mike from Ochi's Lounge days, and I know and trust him mm-hmm. now. But before, back in Ochi's, you know, I didn't know him, and Ochi's was a low-stake place. And what would make me say yes to one versus another is typically we're very transparent on our website. We have mm-hmm. all our producing parameters.
Okay.
Even the door split. We're very uh-huh. transparent with the
great.
Door split.
That's great.
Money. It's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's a no-brainer.
You just need to know what you have
what's
to do.
What's expected
yeah,
of
what's
me.
Expected of you. Yeah.
And also, can I make money? And it's,
right.
you know, as a new producer, I don't think it's wrong for you to want to make money from doing it. It costs money.
No, absolutely not. But also, it gets so shady if it's not.
It's so shady.
I worked with one club that took many months. I threw a charity event for the ACLU, and I didn't get that $1,700 check for months and months and months.
That's a lot of money,
And it
too.
Was stressing me out. It was so, yeah. It was, anyway.
That's very upsetting.
Yeah. So it's great to just, here's the deal. Here's when you get, here's what you get or here's what you owe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that transparency is helpful, but it also just cuts out a lot of BS back and forth. If you, after reading the parameters, mm-hmm. you are like, yeah, I can do this or mm-hmm. yeah, I want to do this, then it's really just about finding the date and making sure that you're the right fit. And what makes you the right fit? We don't do a lot of health and wellness here, any spirituality stuff. But would we say yes to a spirituality thing? Probably, if it was presented in a way that was like, you know what, that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
We're pretty open to any types of things, any type of thing here.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Great.
Dark, storytelling, poetry.
Yeah.
Burlesque we've had.
Oh, wonderful.
But it's been a while. So if you're a burlesque person out there.
Come do a show at QED.
Yeah, variety show. We're missing a lot of good variety acts.
Yeah. They're hard to find. I've had a variety show since 2012, and it's hard to book a variety show.
Yeah, it is.
What's the capacity up there?
Well, our legal capacity is 74, because over 75, it bumps you up into that, talk about those brackets again, public assembly, and you need a public assembly license, and it just kind of changes everything.
Yeah.
I think if we had the public assembly license, I think it would be 120.
Okay.
And that's based on, like, weight pounds per square foot. That's literally
how they
figure it out. Yeah.
Have you ever been like nervous that you were over capacity?
We've been at capacity, but we keep a pretty good head count. We always make sure. And the thing is like I love playing by the rules. Oh my mm-hmm. gosh, I love rules and I love playing by them and I don't like breaking them. They make it makes me uncomfortable to break rules. So I've asked a couple of times, like when we have the drink and draw, we mm-hmm. have a nude model.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, I was like, wait, we have beer and wine and that model's nude and makes me, I don't know, is this legal? It makes me uncomfortable. I'm going to call my attorney. So I called my liquor license attorney and he was like, look, nobody's going to close you down. You're going to pay a fine. You're going to pay a fine. And I'm like, well, I don't have money for a fine, yeah. So no more. So now they wear bra and underwear.
But, oh, interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Or if it's a male, you know, just bottoms, but we don't make him wear a bra. If we were to go over legal capacity, mm-hmm. I think the cops would be called and they'd be like, hey, you got too many people here and you got to leave, you know?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I've come to realize, oh, yeah, I guess people break the rules all the time and just kind of wing it. And I don't have that capacity to, wing it or
totally
to withstand fines and that stress. I don't, the stomach churning nausea that would come over me knowing that I was doing something. I could not handle it.
Yeah. No, just being worried all the time. Oh, it's not worth it.
Just put on pasties. That's all.
Yeah.
done. Fixed. Which is dumb that pasties fix the issue.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
So
I mean,
stupid.
This gets to a different, like the heart of,
free the nipple.
Just not in QED until it's legal. Do you have any, I think we're going to probably wrap up in the next couple minutes. Do you have anything else that you want to talk about producing wise or my favorite? We talked a little bit about it, pet peeves. I love talking about producing pet peeves, about comedian pet peeves, because you're in it and you see all this bad behavior all the time. So whatever you want to go on.
Yeah, I know we talked about pet peeves about contacting via DM while somebody's clearly working. But when emailing or contacting a venue, it's really great if you can already have your pitch in mind.
Mm-hmm.
We get a lot of emails where it's like, hey, I want to perform at your venue. What do I do? And it's like, well, it's pretty clear on our website, our open mics, and have you been to the space? And, you know, doing a little bit of homework.
Yeah.
And especially, and this is true if you're running a show or you want to be booked on somebody's show, go see the show.
Yeah.
Go see it. Support a venue. And people are like, well, how do people find out about me and how do I get booked on their individual shows? I'm like, have you been? Oh, no, I've never been. Well, you've got to go out. You'll sleep when you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
Go out every night.
Do mics every night.
Every night. And if you have a day job, you're going to be tired.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it takes.
A lot of people want all the things without doing all the work. Like years where I just did mics every single night because I had no shows. I had like 2 shows a month and I just did mics every night. And then it slowly changes.
Yeah,
and then you have shows every night instead of mics. And it's great. And then you can take a night off every once in a while and have a glass of wine with your significant other, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Whenever I was at the law firm in Rock Center, it was a legit job. You know, and we did important work with the FDNY and the NYPD on licensing. And especially then after 9/11 happened, then that job became even more vital and newsworthy too. It was all over the front page of the papers and books were published and all this stuff. And so it was real and it was a lot of work, but it was fun. And I liked working with the guys I worked with, the lawyers and stuff. But when I left there though, my job was till 5:30 PM. And at 5:31, I was on my way to a show or to a production meeting or something. I was hustling. And then if I was home, that's when I worked on my website and cleaned. And I taught myself HTML, which
amazing.
Now is, you know, not the most advanced code. So I've taught myself other more advanced code language, but use that time more wisely instead of just vegging out in front of something. And if you're kind of trying to make something happen, well, watching TV isn't going to make it happen unless you're watching for the purposes of trying to figure out joke structure and stuff like that. You know? And then whenever I was working at comics, that was quote unquote dream job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm working in comedy, doing what I'm good at, and I'm getting paid to do it, and I'm getting paid a living wage and everything. That's phenomenal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And every night, Fridays in particular, I'd wake up at 3 a.m. to go do radio because radio starts at a stupid, dumb hour. And so I would have to pick up the famous person, whoever it was.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Aisha Tyler, Richard Lewis, Roseanne Barr, all these people. I would go get them, go do the morning radio, television, Today Show stuff, and then come home and get home around 11 a.m. and then work until I had to be back at work Monday morning on my book. I would write.
Oh, my God.
Just write. Yeah.
That is wonderful and very – I've been trying to write a book for a year. That's why I quit my job, and it's really hard. And
it's really hard.
I'm really struggling to find the time with all of the other little things. Mm-hmm. Like, I can never get on top of my stuff enough to, like – yeah. Yeah. But that is very inspiring.
Yeah. Well, say, do you talk out loud to yourself ever?
Yes. I have a dog, so it's a little less crazy now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just talk to my dog.
Yeah. Talking out loud while I was writing was really good. Yeah. And I'm actually, I told you I'm resurrecting my solo show.
Mm-hmm.
So I just spent a couple of days of my days off from QED are Wednesdays and Thursdays. Mm-hmm. So I spent all day yesterday just talking to myself, walking around, talking out loud, just saying, saying the words out loud and rearranging them and starting from the beginning and just walking. Yeah.
That is great advice. Thank you.
Saying it out loud will clear up some stuff. And Judy Blume gave that advice too. So, but I didn't know that advice until way after.
Until after.
Yeah.
But that's good. That's a model that you want to work off of.
Yeah. Whenever I read her advice, I was like, oh, hey, I do that.
I'm already doing it. Yeah, I'm already perfect.
Yeah.
Anyway. Thank you so much for doing this podcast. Is there anything else you want to?
I'm like, I know I'm going to forget. I teach a PR and marketing class here, usually about every 6 to 8 weeks. It's only $35. It's not expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I highly recommend it, not just because I teach it. people who've taken it have gotten some really, really major good press directly as a direct result. And they will tell you that it's as a direct result.
I want to take it. When's your next one?
Actually, June 30th.
June 30th.
Yeah, Chris
cool.
is teaching his podcasting class that day, and I'm teaching my PR 101 class. But one of the tips I give in that, and that I want your listeners to know, is to actually have a website.
Mm-hmm.
Not a Facebook. Yes, you want a Facebook profile. Yes, you want a page or whatever, Twitter and Instagram and all that. But actually have a URL that's mm-hmm. within your control.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you should be devoting most of your attention. It's important that because one day Facebook will go away, Twitter will go away.
Yeah.
But your website is in your control.
Yeah.
And nobody can just willy-nilly shut it down.
Yeah.
People have had their Facebook profiles taken down for random weird stuff that you never even really know.
Right.
What. Yeah. It's shady. It's strange. And now with all this other nonsense going on with Facebook and social media in general, it's just really, really important. Even if it's not, you know, CambryCruise.com.
Right.
If it's yourname.tumblr.com, that's okay. As long as it's yours and yours
you
alone.
You control
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
To add to that, I just, I'm so mad. So this website, The Frisky, I used to write a lot of funny stuff for them. They just got shut down, and I don't have.
That's
and
good.
On my website, it was like linking to some of my writing that I think is like, you know, funnier or whatever. And I can't get my fill in the blank maid of honor speech.
Yeah.
And I wish I would have taken a screenshot. So anything that you want, take a screenshot because now I'm kicking myself.
Yeah, or I actually give that advice in the class as well. But I suggest exporting it as or saving it as a PDF.
Much better.
And you can also scan it.
Lose the
and
quality.
Yeah, and scan it and make it an image, a high res image if you need to. But you, for that, you might be able to do the Wayback Machine.
I was thinking about that. Yeah.
Try that.
Thank you.
I hope you get it back.
Oh, thank you. And if you're listening, I'll put this out before June 30th. Go to Cambry's class on PR and marketing at QED. Cambry, thank you so much for doing the podcast.
Thank you. This is great.
Thanks for listening to How to Produce Live Comedy. If you like this show, please rate and review us on iTunes. And or Venmo us at Emily-Winter. That's my Venmo. I'm not going to start a Patreon because it's just a limited series podcast, but your dollars do help because it costs money to run this podcast. What else? You can find me at emilywintercomedy.com. You can find photos of the shows I produce on brainmachinenetwork.com. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at emilymcwinter. It's Emily McWinter. Thanks so much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this podcast.